Six music.
BBC Radio. Six music documentaries.
This is BBC Radio six music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Ronnie Woods.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett and welcome to The First Time here on Six Music. This is the series where you meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. This week's guest is a legend, a guitar legend, and someone who's played with a seemingly never-ending list of incredible people. Now, some legends are like royalty. There's a distance to them. This week's guest is more like the knave scampering behind the throne. His musical skills are undoubted, but he's the joker in the pack. And you get the feeling he gets a lot of joy just from being himself, as you'll hear. My guest on The First Time this week is Ronnie Wood.
Poor old granddad, I laughed at all his words.
Here we talk about Ronnie's earliest musical influences. I mean, this is someone that was there during the R&B explosion in London at the start of the 60s, the one that inspired so many rock and roll bands. And we talk about his passion for Duke Ellington, Big Bill Brunsey, and Blues Incorporated. Ronnie also discusses his first band, The Birds, not That Birds, and working with Jeff Beck, and of course, The Faces, and what he describes as the element of risk when it came to playing with them, being on what he calls the threshold of collapse. We also talk about his musical relationship with David Bowie. I didn't know how much the pair had worked together, and of course, what it's like being in the Rolling Stones. And we also discuss his haircut, possibly the greatest rock haircut of all time. But I started by asking Ronnie, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time he was aware of music?
A neighbour of ours around the green, around the village green, his name was Lawrence Sheaf, and he's still alive, and he's a professor of music now in America. But unknowing to me, little Ronnie at the time, he was the first man I saw play the guitar like Big Bill Brunson. While I was in little short pants, I'd look up to this guy and go, I want to play like that one day. And he was very encouraging. And he'd let me watch. And he'd give me a few little tips. And before I knew it, I was playing guitar shuffle. Not as good as him, but it was just a little start. And it gave me the drive.
Up to this guy, was there, could you feel that little spark being lit really early on? Was there always a romance to music for you?
Oh yeah, definitely was. Yeah, it's I always was moved from anything from to this day, from Marley to Mozart, you know. It doesn't I have a very wide range of appreciation.
What was the first gig you saw?
One of the first was Duke Ellington.
You saw Duke Ellington?
Yeah, the orchestra at the Finsbury Park Astoria. Because my brothers were 8 and 10 years older than me, so they were musically my directions. Ted was the jazz direction, Art was the rhythm and blues, and blues and R&B direction. You know, apart from seeing the Motown Review on one scale, when I was younger, I saw the Duke Ellington, yeah, and it was marvellous for me.
What do you remember from that show?
Sam Woodyard, the drummer. I want to be like him, you know. And I did play drums first, actually.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember all the different musicians, and there was Cat Anderson on the trumpet who blew the highest note, you know, and it was like, it's unbelievable watching these firsts come before my eyes and ears. It was marvellous. Another first was the Alex's Corner Blues Incorporated.
Yes.
But you make me feel so dissatisfied. I don't care what the people think. Won't you let me put a tiger in your tank? I put a tiger in your tank.
Thank you.
they had a great band, Cyril Davis and Alexis Corner. Cyril Davis blowing his heart like no other man. And he bestowed his 12-string guitar to my brother Art, and that was one of Art's prize possessions.
It's amazing that that scene around Alexis Corner, it's still spoken about as this phenomenally creative, interwoven kind of scene. And that's the legend. Was it really like that? Was everybody shooting off in directions and playing with each other? Because it seems so exciting.
Yeah, well, I was a bit young to know. I was just... I had the album, London Blues, that was, I think it was called, with Blues Incorporated. It was marvellous to actually watch these guys do it for real.
I put a tiger in your tank.
What was your first performance then, as a guitarist, yours? And was it any good?
Well, my first performance was on washboard, you know, at the age of 7, local cinema. But first on guitar, well, I suppose, was with the Byrds, my school extension band, you know.
There's a beautiful diary that you've done all about the Byrds.
And
you seem to have so much affection for that band that's kind of stayed.
Well, anything that's your first is affectionately thought of, isn't it?
A lot of musicians enjoy performing on stage, but there's that kind of nerves, there's that kind of anxious relationship with doing it. Were you always, oh, this is great, this is where I want to be, I feel comfortable playing here?
I suppose so, yeah. But the nerves went along with it, and the butterflies and the stage fright. That was all dealt with on my washboard debut, you know. When I was 7, I thought, I've got that out of the way.
So the Byrds would be the first thing that you released. Can you remember holding like a single from the Byrds and going, this is it, I'm on wax?
Oh yeah. We actually recorded at Tony Pike Studios in Putney, and a demo, and we actually had a record, You're On My Mind, which I wrote, and that was our first single. Yeah.
Did it ever get played on the radio? Did that ever get played?
I think I was present when it did get played once, yeah. And, you know, in those days, it was gold dust. If you ever got played.
I'm no good without you. I can't do without you. You're on my mind, oh yeah. You're on my my home. Nothing about you, both night and day. I'm rather glad you came my way. I'm no good without you. I can't do without you. You're on my mind, I tell ya. You're on my mind, I tell ya. You're on my mind, oh yeah. You're on my mind. You're on my mind, I tell ya. You're on my mind, I tell ya. You're on my mind, oh yeah.
Got to do another first. I've got to talk about Truth, which was the first record you did with Jeff Beck.
Oh, yeah. Which, bass playing.
Yeah, I know. Play bass. People talk about that as like the first metal album, the first heavy rock album, because it is. You listen to it now, it's got a certain swagger to it. Mm. You know? Tell me about Tell me about those sessions, because that's a good band.
Yeah, unbelievable band that was, yeah. It was a great cross-section of people with Mickey Waller and Nicky Hopkins on the keyboards, and those two alone, you know, and I was the rhythm section complete, you know, learning from all the different drummers like Ainsley Dunbar. Mm-hmm. They teach me to play along with their drum, with their kick drum, and Tony Newman, another drummer we had with them. But yeah, Mickey Waller, the initial band with Rod and Jeff and myself was absolutely kicking.
This is the thing that's gone throughout your career, is chemistry in bands, isn't it? It's finding those people to play with where it just works. I mean, the Faces is a very good example of that, is it not? I mean, was that immediate with the Faces? Did you start playing because you knew each other? And was it like, yeah, this is it. This feels perfect.
Well, it was another feel of musicians getting together, of the element of risk was even more present with the Faces, and the control was totally lost very often. Whereas the control was there with it, with the Beck group, it was a tight machine, and you were under orders. But the rule book got thrown out the window with the Faces, really. So it was one of those stages I had to go through.
Because, I mean, there's something great about hearing a band who are just on the verge of it all musically collapsing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. I mean, tell me about those shows.
Well, John Peel understood the threshold of collapse with the Faces. He let us on his radio show. It should have been filmed. It should have been a TV show, you know. But the audiences were treated to a wonderful spectacle before their eyes of people reaching their tolerance of alcohol and various other drugs whilst in the throes of playing songs.
This is a sidebar. I got to ask you about the haircut, because your hair has launched more haircuts than any other person in music. I mean, I know this is quite a flippant question, but you see, like, your hair has been almost as influential as your music.
Wow, that's fantastic.
You know what I mean, though?
Now, I was thinking of that this morning. Why doesn't anybody ask me that question? And you just have. Well, the thing about it is I still have it, and it still blows me away every time I look in the mirror. I sort of think, I've still got it. And if I dyed it, it would be an incredible dye job to get these little hints of silver and white in there along with the black.
What genes, which member of your family, where does it come from? Because it's great.
Well, maybe that's the reason I'm doing Who Do You Think You Are? I've got to go back and find out. They're doing a lot of research now, so we don't really know.
Another first I want to ask you.
Yeah.
There's a Bowie track, Growing Up, a Springsteen cover, that was supposed to be on David Bowie's pin-up album that you play guitar on.
I was trying to think which song it was the other day.
It's a great cover.
I think it might have been... I was trying to think what it was the other day.
I'm pretty sure it's Growing Up. It's a Bruce Springsteen cover, I think, if my research is right.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah. Mm. What was he like to work with at that time?
Bowie?
Yeah.
He was very caring and very... He would indulge a lot into what he wanted the track to sound like and how I wanted it to appear and sound. I used to love the way I played, and he basically gave me a free rein.
Well, I stood stone like a midnight, suspended in my masquerade. I combed my hair till it was just right and commanded the night brigade. I was open to pain, crossed by the rain, and I walked on a crooked perch. I stumbled all alone through a fallout zone, came out with my soul untouched. I hid in the cloud and wrath of the crowd. When they said this done, I stood up.
This is The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and that was a cover of Bruce Springsteen's Growing Up by David Bowie, featuring on guitar my guest here on The First Time this week, Ronnie Wood.
Six Music, now on BBC Sounds.
Six Music.
I'm alone. matter with you, boy? Sometimes I wanna say to myself, sometimes I say.
I'm Matt Everett, and this is the first time on BBC Six Music, where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is, from the Rolling Stones and a fair few bands aside, Mr. Ronnie Wood. And that, of course, was Miss You by the Stones. So Ronnie was officially declared a member of the Rolling Stones in February 1976, but he'd been in their social and musical orbit for a while. We've got to talk about the Stones, another first, and you will have been asked about this many times. What do you remember from your first gig? With the Stones.
Many chords and song arrangements going around in my head all at once, because I had about 300 song keys and arrangements going around on June the 1st in Baton Rouge, 1975, because that was my birthday. It is every year. And it was quite an initiation, really, because we'd been rehearsing in Woodstock, and Keith and I kept going. We slept about every fifth day and rehearsed all the rest of the waking hours.
It's an amazing story, the way that you joined that band, because it was like, it was in your DNA. It was going to happen.
Like, yeah.
The gods decided it, hadn't they, really?
Yeah.
But how do you fit into that? How do you, as that first gig, that first record, doing sort of Black and Blue, how do you enter their world to become
part
of it?
Well, I'd already entered it because of It's Only Rock and Roll. Recorded in my basement at the Wick. Yeah.
It's done in your basement?
Yeah. With me and Bowie on background vocals, and Kenny Jones and Willie Weeks on drums and bass, and Nick and me on guitars and doing the background, you know, shaping the song.
That's a good band.
Yeah. And then we took that basic track over to Island Records, and Keith said, I took the precaution of wiping all your guitars and I replaced them with his. And I said, but you missed one. You left my 12 string on there. And he went, drat. But you can still hear that on the original record.
Being with the Stones, there is a certain, I don't know, that there was a lifestyle certainly associated with it in the late 70s and early 80s. Was there a point when you thought, I think the lifestyle and the drinking is actually becoming more important than the music and I'm in trouble here? Was there a moment when you were like, this is the flag?
Well, it was always ever present that it could be a stopping point of too much, you know. It's kind of, if I don't control this, I'm going to shoot off the edge of the precipice. And I had luckily a valve that cut off if it was going to be too much, you know, in my body, that said, no, don't go over, don't cross this line, otherwise you won't make it.
Why do you think you've got that switch inside you? Is that a family thing? Is that the stop? Why do you think you've got that?
Oh, I think it's early lessons taught to you by brutes like Peter Grant and stuff, and early marching orders and snap to it. You know, it's a bit like being called up, you know, to the army.
Makes me wonder why
You've always painted. You've always drawn. It's an integral part of your personality.
Yeah.
And is it like music? I hear, you know, this music is something you have to do. It's not a choice.
And so is this. So is drawing and calligraphy, painting. Yeah.
Do you find yourself? Is it every day, or is it a couple of days passes and you're like, I break out the acrylics or the
These
oils?
These days, it's nearly every day. Yeah. The older I get, the more thoughtful I get about painting. I mean, this is the piece I'm working on in my new studio. This is a view of the Thames from Twickenham. I was at a wedding there the other week.
That's beautiful.
I took a picture and I thought, that doesn't look like Twickenham. That looks like Malaysia or something. Anyways, that's my latest.
What does it bring you peace? Does it spark a different part of the brain to music when you're painting? Or is it just you lose everything else and you focus on that? What does it give you, painting?
Well, now I'm concentrating more of my painting efforts out of Berkhamsted, on the edge of Ashford Forest. I'm very taken with landscape. So I'm so moved. I just walk into the forest and it's amazing inspiration. So I'm just landscaping all the time. I love it. And then every now and again, I'll put my a Stones image will come. It's a very Van Gogh kind of feel with guitars growing out of the treescapes. Yeah.
Okay.
Almost, I call them guitarscapes.
Almost Magritte, the kind
yeah,
of... Yeah.
Yeah, very much, yeah. And Escher and lots of shapes within shapes.
Yeah.
So that musically, you can associate that as well as artistically, right, with the changing forms of music into changing forms of the brush and pen.
BBC Radio 6
Music.
Another performance that's remarkable is The Last Waltz, and I was watching it earlier when there's you doing I Shall Be Released with like this incredible group of musicians. Can you remember that, because that's one of the greatest gigs that's ever taken place.
Yeah, I remember sitting like in the Fillmore West next to Ringo and Bill Graham coming up and saying, you two are on in a minute, and Ringo's going, we ain't going nowhere, you know, and we come to watch a show, you know, and he said, come on, no, you've got to do it, come on. And, because I lived along the Malibu Colony. I lived along the beach from Rick Danko and Richard Manuel, and members of the band, you know, so I was roped into that anyway, but I wasn't going to be so presumptuous as to go up there, but I was backstage mingling and everything. And anyway, so Ringo and I got rooted up out of our seats and boom, backstage, you're on next, you know.
So there was, hang on, so there was no rehearsal, you were just on?
Yeah, no rehearsal.
You look really calm.
Well, I was there with Muddy Waters, you know, and all my pals, Bob Dylan, it was great, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love the
band. Some great stories from backstage.
Go on. What else do you remember from that night?
Well, so I remember Muddy Waters talking to, I think it was Pinetop Perkins, his piano player, and he was saying, we got to go and say hello to somebody over here. And Pinetop's going, what do you mean? He said, well, we've got to go over and say hello. Apparently this man is famous. And I said, well, who is it? He said, his name's Bob Dylan.
No idea.
They hadn't met before. No idea.
Never.
many songs are there in the arsenal? How many songs can you whip out at any one time?
Well, due to my early training, I'd never played any of the songs before, but I was always a Stones fan, so I knew them in my head. I knew the arrangements of Stones songs long before I joined the band.
Yeah.
And I would say that there are well over 300 songs, but it's difficult to know.
It's just a body of work.
Yeah. Probably more than 500 in the Stones catalogue. You're kidding? Yeah, there's loads
that you could drop at any point. That you could play in a set.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
I saw a lot of the shows that you did on the last tour over in the UK, and it was glorious. It was just as much of a celebration as it always is. Tell me how that feels. I mean, I'm just fascinated about that.
Do you think the music's got better though?
I think the playing has changed. I think when you dig in to the longer songs, I think that's where it sounds maybe at its freshest.
Something like Midnight Rambler.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the Midnight Rambler? Everybody got to go. Did you hear about the Midnight Rambler?
On stage, are you still sometimes thinking, we don't know where this is going to go. This is going to be exciting tonight. This song could go anywhere. Is it still like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We still have the element of collapse upon us at any time.
Because that's not, it's very uncommon for bands of your scale, not that there are many bands of your scale, when you go and see them, the set list will often be the same every night, and there'll be a certain sound, and it'll, you know, no matter the size of the venue or the shape of the venue, it will always sound a certain way. Stones isn't like that. It is different every night.
I know, because we have to live with each other, and we have to go and see each other. An orchestra can go disband and go to different parts of the country and never see each other again. But we have to live with each other, and you have to own up, yeah.
Because, yeah, that's the thing with, like, a little band at the very start of their career, post-gig in the dressing room, will take that gig apart. You did that wrong. That was too fast. That was the wrong place. Do you still do that?
Yeah, but not...
not in a little dressing room, in a big dressing room.
Yeah, I was going to say, not on the gig bus afterwards, like at each other's throats or getting drunk. No, but what we do is we let the show take its natural pace. And if it keeps and maintains a pleasing, sort of standard, then everyone's pleased and we can move on to the next gig, you know, like, okay, we needn't talk about that. But if there's something that really stands out, that's like got to be attended to, then obviously we have to adjust that. And we have little minor tweaks to songs backstage before sound check. Sometimes we have a sound check within a sound check.
The Blue and Lonesome and the whole album of blues records that the Stones, blues covers the Stones did, seem to really revitalise you, and it's a good raw sounding record.
Good, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, it has revitalised us, especially me, because I and Keith, I think, because being guitar players and with our Hubert Sumlin and all our different guitar heroes growing up from the blues, we have a chance to put that into practice and pay tribute to the people that put us where we are. You know, it's wonderful to not forget where you come from, and the blues is such a great reminder of we would be nowhere without them.
Because there's been lots of talk of, like, we know Mick's writing and Keith's writing. How's the next Originals album coming along?
Yeah, well, that has to be of a similar feel and standard to the stuff that we captured in Blue and Lonesome. And Mick's harmonica as well is very important with the blending and the paying attention to the right things. You know, he blows great. And I think he's finally owned up to the fact that he does, and it's like, okay, let's make some more of this, you know.
So yeah, somebody once said, if you want to know the real Mick Jagger, listen to him play harmonica.
Yeah, in a way, that's another voice for him.
Yeah. So the new, I mean, there will be a new record. Do you know when's the next sessions? How's it moving forward?
Well, it's gradually moving forward, and the Blue and Lonesome were like a jar in the middle. It was like, okay, we'll take a pause, record this, what we do, and remind ourselves where we come from, and now we'll carry on.
Yeah.
But the thing is, these songs are taking their own shape, that we're trying to get the Jagger Richard thing to flow normally again, you know, and so whatever they're doing, I let them resume, and we'll carry on. Me and Charlie was get our call-up papers and say, okay, they're ready, let's go and cut the songs.
It's been very good to speak to you. Thank you very
Brilliant.
Much.
Brilliant.
Cheers.
Great.
Six Music.
Interested in just mishmashing the sound and see what you get.
Straight up bangers, obscure gems, and long forgotten favorites.
Well, we don't have a set list. We're trying to ensure that every show is different.
This is Old Noughties on BBC Sounds.
Decided to sneak up away from your stomach and try your pulse and capture what seemed all unknowing and can't.